The ground attack began at dawn on March 21, when it was still March 20 back in Washington. The reason some accounts differ on the date. The total U.S.-led invasion force consisted of fewer than three Army divisions, plus a big Marine division and a British division. Underscoring the relatively small size of the force, there were just 247 Army tanks in the force driving into Iraq from Kuwait, and about an equal number of Bradley fighting vehicles. The entire ground invasion force amounted to about 145,000 troops, including the British contribution. That is, well under half the size of the force that General Zinni had called for in his Desert Crossing invasion plan. In March 2003, there was just one heavy Army division, the 3rd Infantry Division, plus a helicopter-rich light division, the 101st Airborne, and two infantry brigades, from the 82nd Airborne and a freestanding unit, the 173rd Airborne Brigade, plus some special operations units, for a total of about 65,000 troops. The Marine contingent added another 60,000, and the British 1st Armored Division some 20,000. They were attacking a weakened Iraqi military that was one-third the size it had been in 1991, but which still fielded about 400,000 troops and 4,000 tanks and other armored vehicles. More significantly, it would develop, the Iraqis also had in waiting tens of thousands of irregular fighters called Fedayeen. The 3rd Infantry Division, despite its name, it is a unit heavy in tanks and other armored vehicles, sprinted about 90 miles from the Kuwaiti border across the desert to An-Nasiriya, where it seized a key airfield and, even more importantly, some bridges over the Euphrates. After turning those key spans over to the Marines, the division turned left and charged northward along the western bank of the Euphrates toward Karbala. The Marines secured the southern oil fields, then moved north and began crossing the Euphrates around Nasiriya and attacking up into the land between the rivers. British armored forces, meanwhile, peeled to the right from Kuwait to besiege Basra, Iraq's second biggest city. Much smaller numbers of special operations troops swarmed into the far west, where their mission was to prevent Scud missile launches against Israel, and into the north, where they linked up with Kurdish fighters. It didn't take long for the Iraqi side to begin operating unconventionally. The first taste of what lay in store for the Americans in Iraq for the next several years came just over one day into the war, early on March 22nd, when Sergeant First Class Anthony Broadhead, a platoon sergeant in the Crazy Horse Troop of the 3rd Infantry Division's Cavalry Unit, the spearhead of the division, was looking out of a tank heading toward a bridge in As-Samawa, a town 60 miles past Nasiriya on the invasion route. He waved at a group of Iraqis. Instead of waving back, they began attacking with AK-47 rifles, rocket-propelled grenades, and mortars, riding at the American tanks in pickup trucks. For the first but not the last time, well-armed paramilitary forces, indistinguishable except for their weapons from civilians, attacked, recorded the Army's official history of the invasion. Another taste of the difficult future waiting for the United States in Iraq came several days later, when four U.S. soldiers were killed in Najaf in the first suicide car bombing of the war. The expectation that Iraqi commanders in the South would surrender and even bring their forces over to the side of the Americans by the thousands proved wrong. Not one commander did so. We were absolutely convinced, in a lot of ways, that this guy was going to capitulate with all these Southern forces, General Thurman, the operations director for the ground invasion, said later. We were told that by the CIA. We were told that by intel reports, in the assessment. And that isn't what happened. We had to fight our way through every town,